David said, yep, I want to buy my best friend tickets to the World Series when the Cubs were in the World Series. I was like, okay, sounds cool. We get on the phone with David and his agent, and David said, this is exactly how I want my ad to go. I was like, well, no, we do it this way. And don't ever get on the phone with David Dobrik. Like, never do it, because he will sell you on, you'll give up everything. So I was like, by the end of the phone call, I'm like, fine, we'll do it your way.
Perfect. We're cool with
it. It was pretty quick. Like, David was a force to be reckoned with.
Welcome to That Creative Life. Hi, my name is Sarah Dici, and I am your host. I talk with artists, YouTubers, CEOs, and everyone in between. I hope this podcast helps you live your best creative life. Enjoy. Guys, I'm using a brand new toy today. The Rode, I don't even know what it's called. It's the Rodecaster Pro, I think. It's very impressive. Ian from SeatGeek is here. Does this impress you?
It looks like you're going to create a beat right in front of us. Like, it looks badass.
It's like, guys, we're running a real production over here. Super fancy. But Ian, thank you so much for being here on That Creative Life. Welcome.
I'm very excited to be here.
I'm going to try to not call you Ian from SeatGeek, even though you are Ian from SeatGeek everywhere on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely like branding myself that, which could be bad for my future jobs, but it could be Ian from Blank at some point in time.
Yeah, there
but
you
for
go.
Right now, I'm Ian from SeatGeek. Thanks to David, and I'm going to play into it while I can.
Yeah, I love it. So we, our worlds kind of collided over a tweet and that Ad Age article that you guys heard me talk about last week. We definitely might dive into that in a little bit for sure. Ian and I and a few other people like Casey Neistat and Marquez Brownlee were on the Twitters just defending influencer marketing. So I actually talked all about that in a previous episode. I'll link it down below. And I'm really excited to hear Ian's perspective face to face. But I think it's interesting now because did you see their follow-up article?
No.
They literally posted another one that was complete opposite of Bob's. I called him Bob because I didn't want to call him out.
Yeah.
And it just refuted everything that he said. And they threw it in the opinion section. And that's why I'm like, these places, they have no credibility because they throw everything in the opinion and wait, that's not us.
Yeah, there's no creative oversight. I mean, it's just like, I don't know, anybody can come up with any headline, but to say like categorically influencers don't work and then to cite the stuff that he cited, I thought was really disingenuous. And then I was even more frustrated because it was so obviously wrong, but we're giving him attention.
Bob, you know.
Giving Bob attention and views. So I was frustrated by that as well, but I think it was a good perspective for people who don't know anything about influencer marketing.
It gave us a platform to be like, hey guys, this might be a little taboo still, which is interesting because it's been around for a minute.
Right.
But yeah, it definitely allowed me to have a productive conversation with a lot of people. But guys, for people who don't know, Ian works with SeatGeek, which is, give us the spiel.
Okay. I mean, the spiel is... David would say SeatGeek, David Dobrik would say SeatGeek is literally the easiest way to buy tickets. Use my promo code David for $20
off. With the biggest smile, like on the verge of laughing.
Yeah.
Hey guys.
No, but SeatGeek is a ticketing app. We've been around for a little while. We're consistently the top ranked consumer ticketing app in the Apple Store. Mm-hmm. And then recently we've jumped into the enterprise business. So we actually ticket the Cowboys, the Saints.
Hey, I'm from Dallas.
We can get you tickets.
Dallas Cowboys. Hey, yeah. I'm from SeatGeek. Okay.
We got that hookup. We ticket most of the MLS, the EPL, English Premier League. So I was employee 80.
Wow.
Now we are at almost 500.
Wow.
In 4 years. So it's been going very well.
HQ'd in New York?
Yep. So we've been moving around. I think we're on our fourth office in 4 years, but they got enough space, so we're not going to have to move this time.
Yeah, awesome. So obviously how I heard about SeatGeek through all the YouTubers, Casey, David Dobrik. Recently, you guys worked with Cody Ko to produce a music video.
That was cool.
It was so funny. And I kind of want to break down how these relationships happen, because there's not only a lot of creators in my audience, but a lot of industry folk who are kind of curious about the process and maybe how they can take some of your insights and bring them to their agency, bring them to their business. So first, let's talk about the Cody Ko music video, because I looked it up. It has, as of right now, 3.4 million views.
Yep.
And it's just a hilarious music video. If you guys don't know who Cody Ko is, he does a lot of great YouTube commentary, but what I like about him is he's creative. He makes his own stuff. And they do a lot of goofy rap music videos that have turned legit, which is so funny, right?
So funny.
And so how did this project come about? Did they come to you? Because now SeatGeek is, SeatGeek gives away cars and David's vlogs. Should we hit up Ian? Or are you actively reaching out and inspiring these creative ideas? Do they come to you? How did that one happen, Cody Co?
So Cody Co and Noel, we started working with them about 3 years ago. And since then, I think with a lot of our partnerships, we try to lean into their creativity. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say I'm a creative genius. I am a marketer, but I also understand the people we work with are very creative and are going to come up with really strong ideas. So whenever we met with Cody Co and Noel, we always said, bring your craziest ideas to us. We want to be part with them. Same with all of our influencer community, whether it's David or someone else. We really believe the most authentic way a ad is going to get done is if the creator has the creative freedom to make it theirs. Mm-hmm. So with Cody Co, we knew they wanted to do a music video because we were actually out with them at, they came to a festival with us in Dallas, and they kind of teased this video and said, we wanted you to be a part of it. And I was kind of like, haha, no way they're actually going to follow up with us. And then they did. And we got pitched the idea and I was like, this is really cool. We should probably be a part of this. I can't, like, my dream, I don't know if anyone's seen this, there's a Little Dicky music video back in the day where he pays for his music video while doing his music video. It's called Save That Money. So he literally is negotiating like every aspect of his music video. So I was like, this is the concept.
Yeah.
I sent them the video. I think they were already two steps ahead of me. Next thing I know, we were out in LA filming it with them for the same weekend as the award show.
Blanking on the name. The Grammys? Recent one?
The YouTube. Tana Mojo.
Streamies.
And I love Streamies and I love Josh, so I shouldn't have blanked on that name. But the Streamies. So we did it that weekend. But yeah, they came to us with the idea. We just said we need a couple things in it to make it work, the code. But we wanted you guys to do it how you want to do it. And they ran with it.
Yeah. And it was super great, funny music video. And then, 3 minutes in, they have literally what looks like almost like a SeatGeek bouncer, but he turns out to be, a nice SeatGeek employee, and they just kind of start talking through, oh, look, someone from SeatGeek. And, they throw in the code, save $20 off using the code. And it was so funny. It was an ad that you actually want to sit through because, oh my gosh, what are they going to say? Oh, this is so funny, which I think is so hard to do, right? And I think having that creative relationship with your partners and allowing them to be creative, that's such a huge part, because when brands have so much control and it's only these talking points and it's only this way, people are probably going to skip forward.
Yep.
Right. And so allowing that control is so huge, but has it been a journey to get there?
Yes.
Okay. Because this is what I'm most curious about. Ian and SeatGeek, I'm sure you have other people you work with.
Yeah.
Tell me the journey from the moment you got there. I'm sure you believed in influencer marketing, everything. How long did it take to get to these really creative videos that, maybe it wasn't 60 seconds. It was only 45, but you got to tell Bob, it's not a big deal.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Well, before I get into it, I do want to thank Shannon on my team for working on the TMG thing.
Shout out to Shannon.
She will kill me if I just take all the credit. It wasn't for any joke that I do that. In terms of where we started, so I started at SeatGeek 4 years ago. I wasn't hired to do influencer marketing. We hadn't even heard of influencer marketing. I think at the time we thought of it the same way a lot of brands do. What is that's this shiny object in marketing that doesn't actually drive purchasers. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we're doing podcast advertising and absolutely killing it there, which is a funny way to look back because podcast advertising and influencer are so closely intertwined. Yeah. Both of them are ways where a creator is reaching their audience directly and actually working with them. So I saw what we were doing in the podcast space. And honestly, I was kind of bored at work. The project they had me work on kind of evaporated when I got to SeatGeek. Hmm. And this guy at SeatGeek said, you should look at these FIFA YouTubers. They're really big because he watches them all day. I was like, yeah, whatever. And then I looked it up and I'm like, well, FIFA wouldn't work because the audience is international. But NBA 2K influencers, these guys are getting 200,000 views a video. If that was a podcast, we'd sponsor that in a second. I mean, if you're watching a guy play basketball, play video games, you probably care a lot about him and you care a lot about basketball. So little Ian just DMs these guys and says,
Little Ian.
Hey, can I we'll give you free tickets to the Knicks game if you promote SeatGeek. And these guys were like, yeah, obviously. And then you just get this, like, we kind of fell into a beautiful ad. So I think everyone really likes, I wish I had a nice like strategy. And we, but really it was like, there's an audience here, there's attention here, and no one's reaching out to them. And so if you think about that ad, that's them going to a basketball game, bringing the live event experience to our life, to life, and then finishing it with thanking SeatGeek. And I think a lot of also brands don't think about the creator point of view, where they have great content now.
Yeah. You're enabling creativity.
So they now are seeing, they're giving their audience what, you know, a front row seat at the Knicks game might look like.
Yeah.
So that's where we started. And that we did about three videos that first month back in 2016. We do about 150 videos a month now.
Wow.
We've hit allegedly 2.5 billion views across all the creators we've worked with. We worked with about 1,000 people so far.
Wow.
And these partnerships are all really one-to-one. We don't work with an agency. So we do everything in-house. We have a four-person
team. Which is huge.
Yeah.
So just unpacking that, did it really start with that one person and, you know, in the NBA players, and then you just started adding a few people here, a few. And so was there any desire to add an agency at any point, or did you guys say, hey, we got it? Because very rarely do I work directly with companies. I mean, that is actually extremely rare.
So we thought about it. And for us, it was always come down to the fact that, like, if I can work directly with the creator, why would I put somebody in between? Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people like that in between because they don't want to deal with the messiness of David Dobrik texting them at 9 p.m. and saying, I want to do this tomorrow. Can you make it happen?
Yeah.
Or work, like, when you work with creators and influencers, their time zones are different.
Yeah.
Their patterns of work are different.
Yeah, it's not just a 9-to-5 job.
It's, you're always,
it's
on
24/7.
But that's where the opportunities are.
Totally.
So for us, we never really seriously considered an agency. And I think because of that, we have a one-to-one connection where those creative ideas come to us because people know that we're going to be up for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. Having that one-on-one connection is so rare. And a lot of times on the creator side too, it's, you do get so busy that having that extra layer, whether it's management on the creator side and then an agency on the other side, even though it might make things a little bit longer, maybe it just smooths some of the processes. However, when, I mean, you guys are enabling a big experience. You're enabling like a entire video,
right?
And so I think that's where you're unique, and where brands can maybe try to think the value they can offer outside of money, even though yes, pay us, because, you know, we have, we're not just creating the content, but we have the distribution, you know, we have all of those things. But oh my gosh, if you can enable experience, like an example for me is like when Intel, when they can send me an exclusive laptop to review. Oh my gosh, only four people
have
it.
Laptop.
You know? Well, thank you. and that enables that video because I wouldn't have this device, you know, otherwise. And so I think there's a lot of that white space, and you guys filled it.
Yeah, right? And I think if you're a brand thinking about getting into influencer marketing, the question for you, I would say, is like, what community cares about your product the most? So for us, it was NBA 2K YouTubers. We didn't pay, we didn't do a single cash deal for the first year.
Wow.
It was all ticket swaps.
Yeah.
Because that we didn't know what we were doing. We had to learn.
Yeah.
We had to figure out what works. And so those ticket swaps were what works. But if you're a brand in a different category, I would really encourage thinking about looking at much smaller creators, but creators who are really going to care about your product to really hone in on how you want to do it. Because early on, we made the mistakes of it had to be a 30-second ad. You had to show our app demo the entire time. It had to really come off as an ad.
Right.
And that David changed that a lot because David refused to do that. And I didn't like that.
Yeah.
And, but I also hadn't given this, the more emotional appeal a chance yet. And I think because he forced our hand there, it really pushed the envelope on what we do. And we realized, okay, not everyone needs to hear about our deal score for the thousandth time.
Right.
They're more interested in how that brand is supporting the creator.
Exactly. And they feel that, right? You guys have become, we can talk about David Dobrik for a minute because, oh my gosh, he's crushing the game. If you guys aren't keeping up with him, he averages now 10 million views per video, if not more, which is PewDiePie levels. I mean, I don't think we've seen a creator hit that consistently in a while. And so for you guys to have that relationship from the get-go is super powerful. What was that first video that SeatGeek empowered?
So I remember it pretty like it was yesterday. This guy on my team, Jeremy, reached out to David and he wanted to partner with him. And David said, yep, I want to buy my best friend tickets to the World Series when the Cubs were in the World Series. So this was a couple years ago. And I was like, okay, sounds cool. We get on the phone with David and his agent. And David said, this is exactly how I want my ad to go. And I was like, well, no, we do it this way. And don't ever get on the phone with David Dobrik. Like, never do it. Because he will sell you on, you'll give up everything. So I was like, by the end of the phone call, I'm like, fine, we'll do it your way.
Perfect.
We're cool with it. We're so excited.
Double the tickets.
I came like real hard. And it was pretty quick. Like, David was a force to be reckoned with. And he did the ad his way. And it worked. And then we think we've done 15 videos with him so far. We've given away 12 cars, tuition. I don't know. We've given away so
just
much
cash.
Private jets. Yes. I mean, the thing about David is he, about three videos in, he pitched us. He said, and it was, in hindsight, it made a lot of sense. Well, I'm going to make you guys a character in the videos.
Yeah.
So you're going to be more than just a brand. When people hear the word SeatGeek, they know something amazing is going to happen.
Yeah.
But not every time is it going to be tickets. And you have to trust me that my audience is going to recognize that this is going to work. Yeah. And this is before we did cars and telling my boss we're buying cars. Our ticketing company is...
And guys, not just cars. I mean, these are Teslas, a Ferrari,
Teslas. We just got Natalie a blue Bronco.
Oh, which is beautiful.
I mean... we're at five Mercedes.
Are you guys going through the logistics of actually buying the car? Okay.
David would love me to.
Yeah. But you're just like, bro, we just got to cash a check and figure it out.
Yeah.
Because I imagine that's a little difficult. I imagine that would take some time.
Yeah. I mean, I think I just like to keep it clean just because we're doing so much that I'd rather David figure it out. Like David and Casey wanted to go to the Mayweather-McGregor fight, and he wanted us to book the private jet. And trying to wrangle 10 YouTubers' schedule after that moment with the private jet company, I said, I'm never doing this again.
Which I'll say, in some cases, that's when agencies come in handy because they do that heavy lifting.
I'm not anti-agent. I'm the only thing I would say is if I would encourage brands, I think brands are
to
afraid.
Be more involved, right?
I think people are just... feel like they don't know what they're doing, so they're scared just to reach out.
Totally.
And I think that's a mistake because it's not rocket science. It's a human-to-human connection. And the minute you start outsourcing to an agency, when you reach out, I don't think they're going to tell your brand story as well as you are. They're definitely not going to negotiate as well as you are. And then you lose that connection.
Totally. So from the get, was it him texting you and like, hey, car? Or this XYZ, or was that relationship, did it take some time to develop?
It took some time. I think David lives second to second. So I think when David has a content idea, he stops at nothing to make it happen. And that's where I would never call us a producer, but we play the role of like the Cody Ko video too, where a creator has an idea that they want to execute that is probably going to cost money. And it's a creative idea that they know that SeatGeek's going to support in terms of, so they'll call us. And so I think with David, he will come up with an idea that day and we want to be the place that he calls together. So it took some trust to be built in that we were easy to work with. in that we're not going to send really onerous creative points that he has to hit. And I will approve a video faster than you've ever seen a brand approve a video. If you text me at 10 p.m. at night, I'll have it approved by 10:05.
Oh my gosh.
That's just
what?
That's just how we work.
It makes me so jealous. I will say Squarespace has crushed it on the approvals for me. They're so quick, but they're the only ones that can turn around in like maybe 3 hours, but I've never heard of 5 minutes.
Well, I'm overhyping myself.
Oh my gosh.
But we move fast.
That's, yeah. No, but, and that's why you guys are winning. I mean,
yeah. Cause we're never going to be, candidly, we're never gonna be the most money. We just aren't, but we're going to be easy to work with and we're going to let you have a lot of creative freedom. And I think that's, we understand our value prop and creators now understand our value prop, which has allowed us with for Cody Ko and Noel to say, okay, if we bring this cool idea to them, it's not going to become, you're not going to have five people on the email chain, an agency, a bunch of lawyers. You're going to work with Ian, Jan and Greg, and we're going to make it work.
Yeah. I didn't think about the moment where it shifted from a experience that is directly associated with SeatGeek, like a game, to a car.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Was that internally kind of a nightmare to convince some people that, oh, hey, SeatGeek will be associated with still excitement and fun and joy. It might just not directly correlate with like a game.
Totally. I mean, I think any marketer who gets pitched, you sell live events and now you're suddenly
cars,
basically a car dealership would tell you that you shouldn't do that. And I might agree with them. I would say, but there's exceptions to every rule. And when you have creators like David or people who have that kind of audience, you have to put a level of trust that their audience understands that. I think what's different about, particularly about YouTube audiences is if you support the creator's content, the fans really support that brand. Yeah. So if you could, you can feel the authenticity in David's vlogs that we made, help make this happen. They
totally,
David's literally put himself calling me on the videos, which is an incredible behind the scenes moment. Not one that I was ready for, but.
So that was like on the spot. That wasn't like rehearsed.
I was walking home from work and I get a call and it's like, David's like, hey, Ian, I'm with Jason and we have to ask you a question. And I'm like, okay. And I could tell by their like inflections that like something was off. And I was like, am I on camera? And he was like, yep. And I was like, okay. And then he just goes for it. But I think like it all goes back to like people understand that we're supporting David and letting these things happen. And even though we're not associated with cars, we're associated with David's content.
Right.
So I think that's like what the hump we had to get over internally.
Definitely.
But I could see a lot of people getting hung up on that and never being able to move forward.
For the people out there who are maybe in an agency or maybe they're trying to grow a brand with other people and work with a team, obviously SeatGeek sounds like a wonderful, open-minded place to work. But other people might not have the joy of the same atmosphere of being open to ideas, right? Totally. To even have that initial conversation. So outside of maybe just getting a new job, and maybe that is one option, what's some advice for people who are in it and might want to try out some new ways? Like, hey, affiliate marketing, influencer, maybe not doing the same TV ad we've done every year because we're throwing money down the drain.
Yeah.
What's some advice you give to individuals and organizations that want their ideas out there, but maybe not a lot of people reciprocate? Does it have to be like, does the company have to have a culture first?
No. I mean, I think it's tougher. The more the company is set in its ways, I think it's harder.
Yeah.
I think influencer marketing, going back to that article, has become this like very polarizing buzzword that I think if you can break down what you're actually getting. So I think people don't understand properly that. So when we partner with David or Cody Ko, we are getting someone to ideate an ad for us, to storyboard it, to film it, to act in it, and to distribute it. And to legitimize it. Like if you were to say that to a lot of traditional marketing folk, they'd say,
are you crazy?
that's insane. We need six agencies for
that. Exactly. Yeah.
And we're after, and the distribution too. No. And so I think that's what people don't understand. Or the other comparison I often make is like, imagine you're watching your favorite TV show, and in the middle of the TV show, the main actor turns around, looks into the camera and says, what you're about to see next wouldn't have been possible without SeatGeek. Like, I think when you're, it really helps people to get past that hump if you can really get into, like, break it down to what you're actually buying and get past this influencer word, because influencer now has become, like, very much associated with, like, I view, like, very Instagram influencer campaigns.
Like the people with the T's that make you shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas I think YouTube is just, it's similar to podcasts in a lot of ways, like long form content.
They have a dedicated audience.
I think if you break it down like that, that's a great place to start. And then the second thing I'd recommend is, so I break it down like that, and then I'd say, this is our most frenetic community on YouTube that I think I can reach. So for us, it was those 2K basketball players. I would like to think that each brand has a smaller audience they can reach. Mm-hmm. And then trying to do those ticket or product swaps. Yeah.
Just provide value. Because, you know, the people love the buzzwordy, like, micro influencers or stuff. But people who are, you know, from 10K to 30K on Instagram, if you can provide value in the form of tickets or product or, you know, XYZ, it doesn't necessarily have to be money. I mean, those people are just so excited.
Right.
That, because it, to them, it almost validates them, you know? And so that's, that can be the start of a really good relationship.
Yep. And then the final thing is, how are you going to, ultimately the biggest enabler is if you can track purchasers, which is hard to do.
Right.
But if you can figure out a framework for influencer marketing, for us, it's the codes.
Yeah.
We know every day how many purchases we're driving. So if anyone says, why are you buying David his fifth Tesla? I can point to numbers and show that it's
people
working.
People are using the David 20 or whatever it is. Yeah. They're putting it into the website when they buy their tickets. They're getting $20 off. So it's more value from you guys, right? It's almost, it's not just like a straight up ad, but it's also being like, hey, we're going to save you money, right? So people love to use CAC, customer acquisition cost, right? Yeah. I know words.
That's a word. I don't know very many words. I'm really bad at that stuff. Yeah,
and so if you break that down, it's really costing SeatGeek maybe $20, and then, you know, the fee broken down into all those people who used it from someone's vlog. And then once you get past that and you have a customer for life and they're going to SeatGeek for all their tickets, like, oh, well, that's a pretty good breakdown.
Yeah, I mean, and then you get these fun stats that I don't know what they're worth, but like, you just like, I think three of SeatGeek's top 25 Google searches include the word influencer in it, which is like
interesting.
So like,
people are curious.
Well, people are like SeatGeek David, SeatGeek Cody Ko.
Oh, because they want codes,
and they just associate us with those influencers.
Right,
driving a lot of organic searches to SeatGeek, and then I think there's like those are a bunch of like fun stats, but if you're able to show purchasers, that's the ultimate stat.
Yeah. Because one of the things that we got into on Twitter, I think a lot of people were saying that, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? It's the one space that you can actually properly track and get as nitty gritty detailed. Like, you can see if they check, like, they didn't fully check out, but they have those tickets in their, you know, bucket, and you can get as detailed as you want. But then also there's this side of brand building, right?
Totally.
There's, oh my gosh, that association, like you said, people are organically searching and associating you with these ads. And so there's just so many aspects of it, right?
Yep.
That you wouldn't even think about.
Totally. I mean, I think we're still wrapping our heads around the brand building side just because SeatGeek is such a data-driven company.
Right.
That we know this side, and I think this is the year and a little bit of last year where we started to get more into the brand building stuff, because you can only go so far measuring things just on transactions, and there's these other signs that are clear that influencers working.
Definitely. Does SeatGeek have any desire to get in that content game themselves?
Yes. Yes. So this past year, right across the street, we did a pop-up with David and Fanjoy.
Nice.
I think 10,000 people showed up. Wow. And we filmed a behind the scenes. So like, if we're
I remember that day. Yeah, I was in my office that day. It was crazy. Yeah.
So if we're going to produce content, I think where we fit in is adjacent content, behind the scenes. Yeah. So imagine if David in his YouTube video says, see behind the scenes of the vlog. Mm-hmm. That's the space that we like to occupy.
Smart.
So we've done, and then we've done about 7 videos. I think that video got a couple 100,000 views. We have one video that's close to 1 million. And then we have Team SeatGeek, our Instagram handle, mm-hmm. which is a handle that is just the intersection of SeatGeek and our influencer content, which is very niche, but it has 1.7 million followers.
Oh my gosh. The reason, are you serious?
I swear.
Oh my gosh.
It's mostly thanks to David giving away a Tesla, and part of that Tesla was Team SeatGeek, but it was already doing pretty well. And the reason is, I think it's really hard to do social as a brand, but if you have another intersection of like our influencer content, mm-hmm. see, it's real.
Oh my gosh. Click
1.6.
Click on a screenshot of your tweet, and the screenshot
has
220,000 likes. Oh, what? Because they're like, you're building up your socials?
Well, my team was giving me shit because I was screenshotting my own tweet and putting it on the handle that we as a team run.
Love it.
But I was like,
oh, why not though?
It's engaging on Twitter. Why not bring it over? But yeah, so we have a handle that does that. So I think we're still figuring it out, but you'll definitely see us doing more of that, I think. But when a creator comes to us with an idea,
that's your jam.
That's our jam, because it's cheaper.
Yeah,
candidly, creators love it when you
and that's again
have their ideas.
That's why influencer marketing is great, guys, because you get the production and distribution and the actors all in one.
Exactly.
Right.
You're not buying ads on a platform. Mm-hmm. There's actually humans on the other end.
Yeah.
So if those humans want to do this cool idea, and you say, well, we love the idea, we just need you to do this one thing for us.
Right.
You can get a really amazing ad together.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Well, I think that's great advice. And the thing, okay, I think officially, let's talk about the article just for a little bit, because I feel myself keep going back to it. And since that article was released, it was basically bashing influencer marketing. It's wasteful. Oh my God. 2020 is the year we need to stop. It's dishonest. If you're listening, I'm rolling my eyes like crazy, guys. But I think I said this off the podcast, but since then, there's been another article published. And again, this was all on the opinion side of Ad Age. So, that means we can't hold him accountable for it, right? But I am. Someone was basically like, oh, there's an article published and it's, you know, not credible. And it basically said the opposite of the article. That was so upsetting. So I guess we have to take everything with a grain of salt, right? But it allowed us to have these real conversations, because people do take those headlines and they move on with the rest of their life, and they keep that in their brain. I mean, there was a lot of people when he initially posted it to his Twitter. Oh my gosh, yes. So glad you wrote about this, you know? And I think everyone is kind of in their own circles. And so initially with that, you know, the most upsetting part was just factually it wasn't correct.
Yeah.
Right? And I guess, yeah, what were your just like initial thoughts with it?
Like, who hurt you? I think was what I initially, like, why do you hate this so much? It was just weird to me. I just never have, like, I'm not that passionate. Like, I don't have any passionate hate for any marketing channel. I think any marketing channel has some good stuff and some stuff you should stay away from.
I know, because I felt silly getting so passionate about his article.
I know, me too.
You know, but I was literally, like, sitting on my couch, like, fuming.
Oh, I was pacing around my apartment. My dog was barking at me. My fiance was like, you need to chill out. I was like, you don't understand. It's all lies.
My boyfriend was the same. John was sitting next to me and like, Sarah, you're shaking? Why is your hand shaking? Chill.
Yeah.
I'm like, but you don't get it.
Yeah.
This is what he's saying. And it was so funny because I feel like I was one of the first that called it out. And so I felt kind of like, oh, should I delete it for a little bit? But then Marquez and Casey and you, and I was like, okay, I'm good.
When Casey tagged me, I was like, all right.
I'm going in.
The Godfather's tagging me and I'm in. I'll do whatever you want. Yeah, I guess like it just felt like it was just like so Because there's like three, I think there's like a couple of things that everyone loves to point out with influencer. Fyre Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And then like fake likes and stuff like that. And it's just, I find them just like so lazy takes.
Yeah. Which is what he called influencer marketing, by the way. Because
you could say that about, yeah, about any channel. And like, if you don't know, like, I mean this, I've never found the fake likes and fake follower things like has stood in the way of us doing influencer marketing. If you're smart enough,
check engagement.
You can see it. Like, just like look at the comments. Are they all Russian bots?
Yeah.
Like, are they all the same person? Go into Social Blade.
Is someone
get a weird jump
with a million followers only getting 500 likes per picture?
Yeah. Like, you know? Just come on. Like, give more faith in yourself that you're a good marketer. Like, you don't need. Yeah. And then, like, you're just going to trust that Facebook views are all good.
Yeah.
Like,
let's, oh my gosh.
It was a place where I just didn't know where to start. And then I felt by even engaging on a one-to-one level, I was like,
don't you hate that? That yeah. Like, by engaging in it, you're feeding into the beast.
I know.
That's what I felt a lot of when, I think it was Gizmodo. They would always post, I think Gizmodo, actually did a hit piece on Casey actually. But they do the same thing where this was kind of an isolated incident, but they trigger people because they know that gets engagement.
I know.
And so I was like, oh, I don't want to feed it. But this is like the one of three things I'm passionate about in life. I feel like I have to.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Twitter.
I'm Ian from SeatGeek. I like, this is the only thing I'm born to do. I have no other content.
Ian from SeatGeek, guys, come on.
This is my moment. So I was like, yeah, it got me upset. But at the same time, a part of me is like, okay, as a selfish point of view, the more brands that are scared to do influencer marketing,
the more territory, exactly, 100%.
So I kind of had that conversation because we're still talking about the same things we talked about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of these big brands are just still scared to do it. Mm-hmm. Credit to you because you've gotten a lot of really big brands, but I think there's a lot of brands who are hiring three agencies to figure out their influencer strategy.
Right. Which is interesting because I think a lot of these brands, if they do what you're saying and they build a bridge with the influencer and they actually have those real conversations, you can find that, guys, a lot of these YouTubers are pretty smart. I think you figured out pretty quick that David knew what would work.
Oh, they're
And so if you maybe talk with the people who have that direct line and understand their audience the best, that's probably going to be better advice than any other agency you pay a bajillion dollar retainer to, you know? So it's like, maybe work backwards, maybe feel it out. And then you can like go with an agency from there. But I think it's maybe in the tech space, it's been easier because, you know, these products are, but I guess it's not easier to sell something that's expensive, but maybe there's more margin. They have more money to spend. I'm not sure. But I feel like the tech space has done very well with moving.
I think creators push the tech space because the content is so, because Marquez and you have really pushed and like are into tech on its own.
Right.
You showed them what good marketing is looks
right.
like. I think people forget, like, I think if any of these people, like, I couldn't imagine how hard it would be if you said, okay, Ian, you have to become a content creator now and make a name for yourself and market yourself.
Right.
All these marketers are suddenly like, that's what I wanted to tell this guy. It's like, try doing that and think you're a good marketer. Like, I have millions of dollars. I have a 4-person team. Mm-hmm. I have a brand. I have a product. I'm much easier for me to understand marketing than I think a lot of these content creators. And it just really makes me mad when people disrespect the audiences that particularly YouTubers and podcasters have built, because it's such a grind. It's so hard. It's the ultimate market.
Yeah.
It's a free market of trying to like,
It's like when it's that open, that means that it's going to be more saturated. You have to do things that make you stand out. And it really is, from a creator's perspective, it's a mix of luck too. I mean, the fact that I was obsessed with making videos in middle school 10 years ago, well, it gave me a leg up because I actually like the process of making videos.
Yeah.
And then I discovered, oh, okay, I love talking about tech and the, you know, but it really helps when you have that enjoyment of actually pressing the record button in editing, because that's the biggest hurdle. And probably the thing that takes the most time. David still edits his videos, you know? It's a part of your brand and everything.
Right. Meanwhile, like, I mean, we even SeatGeek even do it. It's like, to think about what we should say on social takes us forever.
Yeah, just to write copy.
Because it isn't second nature. You're not, it's not a reflex quite like it is for a content creator.
Yeah, it's kind of, and that's when talking about finding genuine people. I mean, I think that's easy to sniff out when it's really an extension of themselves, right? If someone's trying to be someone they're not, just read a few posts, watch a few videos, you can pick that up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where there's no, like, the team spends a lot of time on, people get a lot of views, but those views don't always translate to purchasers. Mm-hmm. And so that's the hardest question we have is like, okay, this person's really big on YouTube right now. They're getting 4 million or a ton of views, but should we actually work with them? Mm-hmm. And it's not, there's an art more than a science, but we usually ask ourselves, what's their engagement rate like? Did their audience follow them to different platforms? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is their content super clickbaity?
Yeah.
Is there like thumbnail like super saturated and looks like it's aimed just for 6-year-olds? Yeah. Like, these are all questions.
I mean, this is good though, because these are things that you're giving practical tips. You got to look at the audience. You have to look at the engagement. What audience are they appealing to? Because hey, 6-year-olds don't have their own credit cards. Okay, nope. Start there. And then what, I think the whole thing of like following to different platforms is huge, because it means, you know, are they actual fans of this person, right, or are they coming for the clickbaity titles where one video has 500k views, right, and the other has 2000? Weird. There's no consistency, right?
Right.
So there's definitely things to look for. And with I had a point. Oh no, it was a good point. Where did it go?
It'll come back.
I loved the retweet of, I think it was a New York Times article or something. It was talking about oh wow, shocker, it is a lot of work to make content, kind of what we were talking about.
Yeah.
I actually didn't click on it. Was it for or against Emma Chamberlain? Or was she just the title of it?
It was, it's a while ago. I believe it was a profile of like unpacking Emma Chamberlain's life and day and how hard she works. And I thought it was just funny that
it was a shock to people.
I get why it happened, because that influencer word has become, but it's like, dude, these people are producing shows that are more than like cable TV shows by themselves. I've seen David. I know how hard that guy works.
Yeah.
He's working nonstop. He's editing his videos nonstop. I've been around Cody Ko, Noel, a lot of different creators, and they put so much work into it. Because think about it. You have a one, sometimes 2-3 person team doing the job of a media company. Mm-hmm. They're mini media companies. Meanwhile, they're managing their merch and their other business, their ads, their podcasts. And so I think that was funny. I think Mr. Beast commented on it, which is why I got a lot of exposure on that one.
Mr. Beast, what a legend.
Yeah, that was cool.
Who are the people you're looking at now that might be the next Emma Chamberlain, or maybe they don't have, this is the point I was going to make. What I found with, in terms of engagement and really converting sales, is sometimes that view count isn't the most important, and that there could be someone who gets consistently 10,000 views, and those 10,000 followers are looking to this person for what they're going to buy next, right? And so that's something to look at as well. But do you watch anyone personally?
I watched David. I've watched Casey for a while. You may not know this guy, Pat McAfee. He was a podcaster who I'm close with, played in the NFL.
Awesome.
Started his own company. Now he's a big YouTube channel for sports stuff.
Do you have your eyes on anyone? Any TikTokers that are appealing?
Figured out TikTok. Our newest partners are Kian and JC.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Who came to us with a cool idea. They have the Reality House.
Yeah.
So we're the official sponsor of the Reality House.
Love it.
And the Reality House, I think, is basically like a Big Brother-esque production, but with YouTubers. So that was like I think we're looking for any ways to up-level our content. We work with these guys, Too Hype, Christopher London, Jezzer the Laser, a couple other guys. They're actually the first people I referenced we worked with. Mm. And we just built last year a basketball court in their backyard. So it's our first like court sponsorship.
Love that.
So those are the things that we're looking at. That's like the pitches we get are crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of next creators, we're always looking for new creators.
Yeah. Do you watch TikTok at all?
I love TikTok.
Yeah. I'm a consumer of it. I just don't.
Yeah, but that makes me feel like I'm an old. Like, yeah. It's like, I'm at the stage where I'm like, I'm never going to post a TikTok, but I'll watch it, which is like how my mom would say about Instagram.
Right.
She'd be
right.
Like, I love Instagram, but I'll never post.
Right.
But the problem is the algorithm is too good.
Yeah.
It's too good.
Well, see, okay, I wanted to ask you about this because I got on this back and forth with Hank Green, and he's going to be on the podcast soon, which is very exciting. He's like an OG, you know, he created VidCon, okay. OG YouTuber,
yep.
Author, huge, the Green Brothers. And we were talking about TikTok and how it's so algorithmically driven. Mm-hmm. We think that, you know, it might be harder for creators to actually make a living on there, yep. Because you open TikTok, you're not watching the content of the people who you follow,
yep.
Which has been the traditional model, right? Yep. So you go there, you get served anything and everything. Mm-hmm. They surface their own ads from companies who are paying TikTok directly.
Yep.
And there might, you know, there is a way to link out to Instagram and YouTube from the profile, but people have to do that extra action, mm-hmm. of clicking on the profile, checking out the creator.
Yeah.
So do you, yeah, what are your thoughts on it? Do you think brands are going to go in there via influencer, or I think they're setting it up to where they're just going to skip that as a whole, just do the paid media via TikTok, yeah. Because it is so algorithmic. And I'm sorry, I'm rambling now, but because of that, I feel like creators that are big on the platform are going to start to be discouraged if they're not making money, and they're just going to hop to the other platforms where they can make money.
Yeah. If I were to predict the future, I would say YouTube is always, at least for the near future, is always going to be where people push back to.
Yeah.
Because that's where the money is. That's where the real audiences are. I think that's a true test for a creator, is if you can have a YouTube channel, because mm-hmm. it's really hard. In terms of where I see TikTok going, right now I see a lot of dogs. That's what my algorithm gets me.
Dogs and babies doing that.
It's babies. And it's like that one voice modulator that makes you sound like you're talking to your mom. That brings me back. So I get literally just dogs and the voice modulator. In terms of money, yeah, I think big brands are going to make splashy plays. Chipotle did something cool with David. I think you're going to see cool challenges where they're sponsored from TikTok. So it's the top hashtag. Mm. It's like a challenge.
Yeah.
And then they're going to seed that challenge with like 20 top TikTokers. So those top 20 TikTokers are all going to do.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Like the hint challenge.
Right. Right.
But.
So maybe TikTok can bridge that gap and have certain partners. They can maybe work as an agency with these top creators to keep them there.
High profile. So it has to come through TikTok.
Right, right.
I don't think you're going to see, it's going to be really hard for direct response brands like us who have a code.
Right.
To tell your brand story in, I don't know how long the TikToks are.
Well, not just that, but also the fact that you don't know if that TikTok is going to get 8 million views or 500 views, right? Yeah. When it's so algorithmic.
I do find the ads on TikTok interesting.
There's a lot of, this is interesting. So what ads do you get? Because I get a lot of the, you can't pay for gas this week.
Yes.
Borrow money. And I'm like, are these like payday loans being advertised to like 13-year-olds?
And Robinhood. And I'm like, do these 13-year-olds buying stocks and getting payday loans?
Just snorted. That's embarrassing.
What I was trying to figure out. I was like, is it just because I know I'm an old person, or is like 13-year-olds getting payday loans and using that payday loans to buy their Robinhood stock.
Wow, you know what that's telling us, Ian? It's telling us that we're old.
I know.
It knows that we're 25 plus, and so that's the ads. Yeah, I hope too.
I know 13-year-olds should not be buying stocks yet or getting payday loans. Yeah, I'm very intrigued. And Facetune. I'm very just intrigued by the ads I've seen there, and then I've seen a lot of Pepsi. But yeah, I love TikTok.
You know why you see a lot of Pepsi? It's because VaynerMedia runs all their stuff. I'm sure that's a direct from the top from Gary Vee. Get on TikTok.
Probably. I mean, it seems like a thing Gary Vee would say, go all in on TikTok now. Yeah. I haven't gotten served that Gary Vee thought morsel yet, but yeah, I like TikTok. I just don't know what we're going to do. We actually have a lot of TikToks tagging us where people do the ad read. Because the ad read has become such a meme, people do
it. That is so funny.
Do it.
But see, that's the brand building. Yeah. It's already cashing in. So they don't even have to worry about TikTok.
Well, see, I download those TikToks, and then I post them on our Team SeatGeek account.
I love it.
All the people, like, we have like a weird meme culture around like SeatGeek and influencer. Yeah. And
no, I love that.
Tickets in literally the easiest way possible.
Yeah, I love it so much. Okay, anything else you want to put out into the world, Ian? Any declarations? Any encouragements?
Declarations, encouragements.
Speaking directly to creators or people in agencies.
Don't be scared of influencer marketing. They are humans at the end of this tunnel. So I think I would encourage any brands looking to get into influencer to do the work themselves, to reach out to creators and talk to them and realize there's humans at the end or other end of this. And that this is a proclamation. In the age, if you think about where, oh geez. So if you, this,
get it, Ian.
This is a little meta, but I'm just saying, I think about how many ads you get served every day. I think people never take a step back and think about all the out of home they see, the SEM ads, the Facebook ads, all these different ads. The stuff that is breaking through the clutter, in my opinion, is authenticity, which is very cliche, but where the authenticity right now is on YouTube, these people building businesses and talking to their audiences directly. So if you understand that, I think you can really wrap your head on why influencer marketing works and maybe why, like our Cody Co ad is going to get as many views as we would get if we got a cable TV ad, mm-hmm. but it's way more impactful because mm-hmm. people actually are listening to what he's saying. They love the ad. So I just really encourage people to think about it that way. So that's my rant.
Love it.
And then finally, I want to thank my team really fast because Ian from SeatGeek has a lot of shout outs, but Greg from SeatGeek's good. Shannon from SeatGeek's great.
You know, they better change their title on Twitter.
They won't because they're like, we're just clout chasing Ian, who's clout chasing all these influencers. They already make fun of me enough. So they refuse to do it. There's going to only be one Ian from SeatGeek.
Only one Ian from SeatGeek. Thank you so much for being on That Creative Life. Guys, make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, all the things. And we're posting again to the YouTube Clips channel. It's back up and running. So you can check out Ian from SeatGeek there. Maybe share one of your favorite moments with a friend. Be a mini influencer in your life. Influence them to listen to this podcast, please. Ian, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.